And I expect at that time, at least to get into the meat of step 4 and 5, knowing that they are continuations of the first three steps. Eh? The first three steps are trust. To be at the meetings are vitally important. You cannot make it without the meeting, AA or Al-Anon. But what I'm trying to stress now is that there's a lot of deeper stuff that has to go on, that you've got to dig in and start bringing some of the unconscious stuff up to the conscious level so that you can start changing the behaviors, and then that is what's going to be able to get you to be feeling better about yourself, and that, you know, what are the real concepts in our life continually about ego reduction and about hitting bottom and about surrender. I've been a lot of horror stories about hitting bottom. As you can imagine, I live those every day of my life, being at the on Skid Row. And yeah, you just shake your head, and you know, but unless there's surrender, it absolutely does not bring about any type of growth experience whatsoever. It is just a cacophony of one horror story after another until the story's over, which is basically death. And so when we're dealing with the first step, it's what are the realities of that that we look at, so that, again, we're talking about life, get to freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity, which are not pious puffballs in the sky, but documentable, measurable, behaviorable, observable actions in relationship to other people in the journey, all right? And then in getting into the second step, yes, we got to get out of the driver's seat, but that doesn't mean turning everything over to everybody else. What it does mean is getting the humility and consistent humility to be able to accept what other people, first of all, to accept other people, and then to accept what they are saying, you know, and start working on them and not just rejecting it because we're better or more superior. Remember, there's a terrific amount of grandiosity and big shotism and I know, you know, that I can do it and all of this type of stuff. And we have to say, When we start going from what I call compulsive behavior into redeemed behavior, you've got to go in the directions which you are mostly not inclined to go and make yourself do those things for growth purposes. St. Francis Assisi could never hated ugliness. He was a seven who liked beautiful things all his life. If he ever was there, I was never there. But at St. Francis in Assisi, but it's absolutely gorgeous, and the whole concept of birds and all of the beautiful, marvelous things in life, he couldn't stand lepers, couldn't stand anything that was ugly. But until he had kissed the leper, he could not see the leper's beauty, right? And so sometimes we like to wall ourselves off, even as recovered alcoholics, you know, and not go to where we have to go to be redeemed. And in the third step, then, it's just the reality of accepting a creator who created us, right? And that makes us creatures. You know? Like, because I keep hearing, my God is this, and my God is my God, and my God, and I go, I think, well, now who's God? You know? And again, the reverse side of that coin is if I keep saying I'm no good, I'm no good, I'm no good with all this phony humility, with this phony depreciation of life and self, what the person is really saying is, there is no being greater or than me that can forgive me, so I'm unforgivable, so I don't have to change. There's no trust there, and there's no opening up to external forces, influences, higher power, spirituality, God, whatever they may be. And so that we can just stay, you know, with the energy always being over against. Right? And that is continuing fighting. And the words might not always say that, but the behavior can. So, questions on that. Questions on the first three steps. And some of the, just the stuff I was talking about. Yes.
How far you would open up at an open meeting if you were the speaker or a discussion meeting as opposed to the individual. sometimes.
Big difference.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you could offer some sort of guideline, because I think I've seen people open up what appears to be a little too much in the context of a meeting, and it seems to not turn out very well for them.
Could be a way to manipulate other people. Right? First of all, everybody's got a secret part of their life. Okay, I'm going to say some things now. There's a tremendous amount of holiness in this room. There's a tremendous amount of sanctity in this room. There's a tremendous amount of wholeness in this room. All right? To quote... Oh, I forgot. That's Brayton Davy. Cardinal Newman. Right? All of the sanctity and the wholeness remains hidden because we are scared to share the secret of our hearts. Right? Now, in answer to your question, there's appropriate places to do that with appropriate people you can trust at appropriate times. There's also in every human being, right, a sense that should remain secret, right? And to share that with the person which he wants, or does want, or maybe not at all, right? Although, when we get talking about the fourth step, it is not appropriate, you know, to use an open meeting to, depending again on what personality type you are. You know, like a lot of us, the type of personality I am is that the more I can shock people, the happier I am. You know? I mean, you don't know how good I am being today. You know? But most people would say, please excuse me, I really don't want to say this, but shit. Now, when I say shit, I mean it. And if I see people squirm, great, right? That's an eight, which means we love to be bad, okay? So there's about nine different character types like that, personality types. Some people could get up and exploit the senses of other people at an AA meeting by shock value, right? Let me really show you how bad I've been. And I'm going to be very, very truthful with you after hearing 50,000 fifth steps. People tell what they want other people to hear. Okay? And so, certainly, there is appropriate behavior to always respect the people we are talking in front of, right? Not to scandalize or just shock for shock value, or to really get them to feel sorry for me, or really get them to offer help or pity or whatever. Right? That is not appropriate. At the closed AA meetings is certainly, and Al-Anon meetings, just the same, is sharing with people how we're getting well. What is the reality of this step today to me? Right? It's not going by, like again, life is now. I haven't got my glasses. But whoever was reading this thing read some very, very beautiful things just now that are very pertinent to what we're talking about right now. It's now. Now's the opportunity we have. And so when we're at the closed discussion group, it's sharing with people how we get well. Yes, alcohol got into my life. Yes, what is alcoholism? It's a conflict between behavior and values in the drinker. A measurable, documentable, observable, definable conflict between the person's own behavior and the person's own value. Now, it took me 7 years to become an ordained Roman Catholic priest. Within 363 days, I came through Ruby Foo's nightclub window and ended up in a hospital where my father was the head physician for 26 years and where I had been saying Mass 2 days before. Is that a conflict in values? You know, if there's one person here that doesn't think that's a conflict, we have another place for you, right? But that is certainly not the gift that God gave me. It is certainly not where I spent my energies for 7 years getting up at 5:30 and doing all the wild things we had to do. Prayer for 5 hours a day and get all these degrees, and then in the summertime pitch 30,000 bales a day to end up in the Laughing Academy. So measurable, period. That's it. You don't have to go into all of the, you know, remorseful stuff that went on. And sure there was, because the real hell of alcoholism is waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning knowing you are not the person you are supposed to be. Right? And, you know, certainly affecting all kinds of other people. So I'd say we have to be sensitive to the other person's feelings, right? And what is contagious? Bonum defensivum esse, that's Latin for goodness, diffuses itself and is contagious. Laughter, right? In fact, one of the signs of your spirituality is risibility, the capacity to laugh. And one of the signs of spiritual growth is a sense of humor. You do not have that, you can get locked up pretty rigid. And alkies can get pretty rigid, you know, where no one would ever think of making fun of them or anything. And if we cannot allow our brothers and sisters to laugh at us, something, you know, in good humor, not poke fun at us, but laugh at us, you know, then there's something seriously wrong, right? We're taking ourselves much, much too seriously. And this whole business of getting through another day, right? That life is so serious, and this recovery is so serious, and everything, yeah. Again, what you've got there is an over-definition of a personality. Whenever you show me an over-definition of a personality, give me time, and I will find a compensation someplace else, right? And so therefore, it's not really living and let live, it's not living and let go, it's not, you know, being at one with the universe, enjoying and getting along with, but it's fighting it. So I say you have to be, you know, have to be respectful of other people's feelings with about how much you share. Now, in the fifth step, that is something totally different, and that is something that is with someone you trust implicitly. And always make sure you get somebody who knows what they're doing, you know, and has done it, and has some credibility, and who you trust. Right? And are able to share that, because what you're going to share is, you know, the divine side plus, you know, the shadow side. That's okay. Yes?
My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Father, my question pertains to psychic change, and spiritual experiences in the appendix, and spiritual experiences in the text. And I find my question really is, if psychic change and spiritual strength, and maybe one and the same, and when I compare the appendix to psychic change, I find great similarity, but I find a dissimilarity in text. And in that, in the appendix and in the psychic change, it would be that even an atheist or an agnostic could experience that psychic change. Can an atheist or an agnostic experience have a spiritual experience? Is that possible, or is he just fooling himself?
No, I think it's possible. Again, the spiritual experience is developing the sense of solidarity within yourself so that you are able to accept the stranger coming as a bearer of gifts. The simplest way I can put it. Psychic change is conversion, metanoia. It means changing from a vision of hostility, superiority, defiance, and anger into a life vision or a tonal change, so then that it becomes surrender, not anger, but what the opposite would be love, would be acceptance, would be not fighting against, would be becoming one with humanity, becoming feeling like one belongs. Am I getting there? Okay. So for an agnostic or... Again, I got to really go. I mean, I've been through some great stuff, but it's all of that mental gymnastics. Like, if anybody here is an agnostic right now, you know, I have no problems with that at all. And I'm not trying to be funny, but come and skydive with me. I've done that, right? And when the plane's open, there's only 3,000 feet between you and 17 seconds before your mouth full of mud. Guess what people do? Right? So I'm not trying to be funny about that, you know, and I often wonder about, you know, what brings about that, but in foxholes and things, so you don't have to be, flaming born again. That's not what I'm saying at all. In fact, that can get to be, well, actually, you know, like things like what's his name? Jimmy Baker. Right? Now, I'm not knocking that stuff, but that becomes very addictive, right? The TV evangelist type stuff, right? Where people are giving over everything to them, their house, their money, their everything, right? And it becomes, again, self-perpetuating more and more and more. And people then are using that to change the way they feel. And believe me, when we use something outside of us to change the way we feel, and we all get caught in those games because none of us are pure, right? We got alcohol, and others could be drugs, others could be power, others could be recognition, others could be sex. Oh. Now we got a priest talking about sex. What the hell does he know about that? Use of people, right? Again, all coming from the outside. Robbing us from the sense of the solidarity, which I'm trying to get us all to say what we've got to delve into, that there's work to be done. I know there's work to be done, and there's work to be done in me. You know, and just because I can, you know, work with these concepts and teach them, and doesn't mean that it's not a reality. It's not with me, this is not mental gymnastics, right? It's a journey and a life process. Again, the psychic change talks about conversion. Conversion from negative to positive. I was just reading about it at noon. Changes which transpire during a conversion, a psychological event in which there is a major shift in personality manifestation. You grouch? Okay. Swayed by predominantly, before the conversion, swayed by predominantly hostile negative attitudes to predominantly positive affirmative ones. During the course of the alcoholism illness and also Al-Anon, or let's say the person living with the alcoholic or the, how else do I say that? But you know what I mean, right? Spouse, friend, whatever, okay? There develops a personality pattern which is characteristically negative, with a characteristically negative, hostile coloring. The tendency is to be tense and depressed, aggressive, or at least stubborn, oppressed with a sense of inferiority, at the same time harboring feelings of superiority, perfectionistic, rigidly idealistic. And as long as we hang on to that, we get off the hook for ever having to take any risks, for ever having to love, because that might be perfect, for ever having to do things. Because where the perfectionism robs us of all kinds of time for opportunities to grow. Weighed down by an overpowering sense of loneliness and isolation, egocentric, and all that implies in the ways of self-centered orientation. Defiant, either consciously or unconsciously, walled off and dwelling in a large extent in a world apart from others. Does that answer it? I mean, ask questions, because I mean, this is stuff I work on, and you know, I'm just, it's not, again, it's not magic. The conversion process is not a willed experience. It's not something I will. But it comes about by the hitting the bottom, and unless the hitting the bottom is followed by surrender, nothing is going to happen. We'll just go, oh well, another bump in the road, you know, chin up, stiff upper lip, da 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 da, and go all the external things on it. But the hitting the bottom, as I was reading that, you know, we just walk around with the Mona Lisa smile on our face all the time. I'm just trying to read and find that part. But it is not something which is brought about. Act of surrender is unconscious, not willed by the alcoholic. And it is there to jar himself loose from this world of self-centeredness. See, the defiant individuality, and that was Bill Wilson's, well, with self will run riot, and something in the big book about, you know, as individuals we were rank horrible failures. But this defiant individuality and grandiosity both operates in the unconscious layers of the mind, right? And so the grandiosity is the persistent infantile ego of omnipotence. Now, how many of us have been big shots in our recovery? Huh? I mean, Mr. Big Shot. Mr. Super, somebody, what? Oh, think nothing of it, right? And we're caught in the big shot-ism. And what that is the unconscious continued manifestation of His Majesty the Baby. Continuing on in the omnipotence that we're all for. Has anybody ever told you, you cannot do that? Watch what happens. Right? For good and for ill. And that's what we'll talk about in the fourth step. You know, if somebody comes in and you're doing something and they say, oh, no human being can do that. Absolutely not. We just smile. Watch me. Right? Now, sometimes that can be done for good purposes. I've experienced that. Okay, does that answer it? Okay. Other questions on the first three steps, or where we are with trusting?
What do you mean by that you accept the accepting the stranger that's coming as a bearer of gifts?
Yeah, that everybody in this room has gifts. Everybody in this room has gifts. Everybody coming towards us has gifts. Now, can we develop our own solidarity within us, you know, our God-likeness, created in the image and likeness of God, creator, higher power, whatever, so that we are able to remain receptive to the gifts which they are bringing? It means listening. It means a lot of being present to people. It means no more comparing. You know, it means sometimes being quiet. Sometimes not seeking applause. Sometimes, you know, not trying to be a star of the show. Sometimes, you know, not trying to make everybody like us. Yeah, that's every bit as compulsive, manipulating as, you know, if I keep acting so that everybody's going to like me all the time, doesn't mean we go around trying to insult people. But what is our in face of our vision of the people in the world? And that means with the people around us, you know? And that means how do we handle, you know, you always hear, pray for your enemies. Isn't that nice? Huh? But how about the jerks in your life? Big difference, eh? Because the jerks in your life have faces and idiosyncrasies which are driving you nuts and all kinds of things, right? And in the spiritual life, they are your best friends. Doesn't mean you're going to like them. There's a lot of difference between like and love. You know, the love again is to extend yourself for their well-being. But they are going to give you the opportunity to see yourself and some of your shadow side, and to accept the shadow side. Does that work a little bit? Okay? Now, it doesn't mean you get on the elevator Monday morning into downtown business building. You're going to go up and don't tell everybody you love them at the elevator, right? They'll be locking you up pretty soon. Different. Yes? What's God's will for us and what's God's will, you know, my God, that's the big thing. The only thing God can will is good. God cannot will evil. God cannot get mad at you. God does not go through horrendous things of punishment. You know, all of those things, I know where they come from in the Old Testament. They had to encounter things and they had to talk in the things of which those people were familiar in the symbolisms of which they knew. God is love. Period. Now, you know, yeah, what is God's will for me? That's the continual opening up to that. Continual saying to yourself, does God approve of what I'm doing now? And then you give it your best shot. You're the only judge for that. You can keep growing on the journey, and what worked when you were 15 years old does not work anymore. And so many people get caught in that. Well, when I, you know, my religious training was 15, and they told the nuns or priests or this told me that, but now I'm 37, and it doesn't seem to be working. It's not supposed to be working at 37, right? Whatever age. But all you're doing is asking yourself, does God approve of what I'm in any situation in your life, in any relationship you're involved in any associations with other people? Ask yourself that question. You'll get your answer. You don't have to be running around to priests and rabbis and counselors and, you know, like I know tons of people in AA who have 18 sponsors because they know which sponsor to go to get the right answer, right? I mean, if this sponsor is in a situation which is contrary to what people would think would be a good situation, but I find myself in this, I go to him and I know he can't say no, right? I'm just saying. But the only thing God wills is good. Now, you know, you're going to say, sometimes you'll say no. You know? The greatest gift God gave any one of us in this room, alcoholic and Al-Anon, is pain. And how we swore and yelled and screamed and blamed and projected and did every other blame, every other, and that went on, and you know, we threw our little omnipotent baby infantile tantrum fit. But if that pain had not been there, we would have never changed. Because we stay in a comfortable place in life until, and we just keep doing things that are comfortable over and over again, until it gets uncomfortable. And we know that we can't keep doing it. And that we are alcoholics, we deny it. Other people kind of tell us that we can't be doing it. The police, the doctor, whatever. You know. The people in blue uniforms and white uniforms and all that type of stuff. Come, you know, and family. And the same with the Al-Anon. If the pain isn't there, we just keep doing it. But evidently the pain gets, and the words are always sick and tired of living the way we're living. Now, sometimes it'll take a 2x4 to make our attention to get that, and so that we can really start seeing the chaos that's been caused. Okay? But again, what we do is sometimes we anthropomorphize. Very fancy word is meaning to put human limitations on God. How could God forgive me after all of the things that I've done? God, higher power is higher power, fine. Not us. But what we do is we put human limitations on it and say, well, I can't expect any of that, so therefore, no, that. And so and then we get God is our Santa Claus, God is our needs provider, God is our buddy, God is this, God is that, God, and we're on a verse. That's not worth that at all. He is the creator of the universe who creates, you know, for a purpose. That plan is continuing to evolve. Now, is there evil in the world? There are 40 wars going on right now. And this beautiful earth, which we are created to learn to love each other. And I did go up to read in the fourth, at noon hour, I went upstairs in the rectory and read, and what's your face got off on mental insanity. The big story of the world, okay? Babbitt, what's her name? Babbitt got off on mental insanity, okay? So now the ping-pong game has started, right? Because the next column said the feminists are screaming victory, and now the male chauvinists are saying, we'll get you, right? So again, we get into the eternal ping-pong game, which is going on all the time. All the time. That's why Jesus didn't hit back. If Jesus hit back, it would be an eternal ping-pong game that started. Who's right? Who's wrong? Who's the problem? Who's not the problem? Right? And it never ends until we stop it ourselves and get into what is acceptance of other people and forgiveness. Other questions on the first three steps? Or first part, or whatever I've said, or haven't said, or want to say, or want me to say, or whatever. Okay, we've got a half an hour to look at the four steps. Okay, now, again, remember this is a program of principles, not personalities. This is not a moral rearmament shot. A moral rearmament program is a program which goes around and you confess all your sins to everybody. Very, very stupid. Right? I know of a whole football team that was dissolved in a matter of no time because the players went to the owner confessing their indiscretions. Wow, that's a new one for me. Anyway, okay? That's not what we're about. What we're about is freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. How do we arrive at that? Okay? And now we get down to the internalization, but first of all, realize what we've done is we've learned something about trust. And this is where you have to go associate in AA at a deeper level than just drinking the coffee and sitting in a smoke-filled room and busting out of here as soon as the last minute of the meeting is so that we can get home and get out of here. That same walled-off spirit. We have to learn to doubt. How many of us came in here trusting anybody? No way, Jose. I mean, I, as a priest with the vows of poverty, sacrifice, but oh God, look what you did to me, right? Wow. And so we can get mad and we can, you know, and I was fortunate enough that they locked me up for that amount of time because I was going to go build my own church on Waikiki Beach and do this thing the way God knew it should be done, right? Because I had a big family inheritance, which also God got, right? Which I wasn't happy about. Anyway, thank God, can you imagine what would happen if I got it? I wouldn't be here today. This definitely states that I would have been lost out of the priesthood by 33 and dead by 35. And that's signed by some pretty powerful people who know what this business is all about. And so now we get down to the four steps, and everybody comes into AA 3 hours after they've come through the door, they're going, oh, the four step, I'm sweating the four step. Forget it. if you haven't got to the first step where your vision of life, again, is positive, creative, accepting, if you haven't got the gut feeling where, you know, your Velten Shaul vision of life is something positive, moving to what you were asking me from that negative, hostile, aggressive, stubborn, superiority into a tonality of graciousness in a bit with humility, you're not going to be able to do it. You're still going to be caught in competition. Who's richer, who's poorer, who's smarter, who's dumber, who's better, who's... And the ping-pong game continues. And so in the first step, we've got to come to that real, you know, acceptance that this is a good thing. And the only way we get the good thing, positive creative acceptance, is by doing the good positive action. Second step, you're moving on to starting to trust people. And that means you've got to start associating with people. Nobody ever got sober and well alone. Nobody stays well alone. I can go all kinds of, references to that. You know, and that part of our problem is walled off. You know, the alcoholic song was, I don't belong. I don't belong. I'm born at the wrong time. And so when we get into the second step, it's that business of at least being able to, and learning to trust. You know? Learning to trust. When somebody says, can you make the coffee? Say, yeah. You know? Or pick up the ashtray, say, yeah. And then you start doing it that way. You know? You can't say, no, I can't pick up the ashtray because I got a sore finger and I'll break them. No. Somebody says, give a talk, say, yeah. Well, I can't. I haven't been in long enough. How long have you been in? 22 years. See, I'm scared to risk. What difference does it make if the only mistake you can make is not to try? Look, I'm 60 years old. I haven't seen a puck for about 9 years, but I'm out there, right? Don't tell the other guys or they'll leave me from the trip. The next trip's Winnipeg if his arm straightens out. Now, if they know I don't see the puck, they'll leave me at home. But anyway, you know? And because of that, the last time we played in Toronto, like $240,000 for the Cancer Foundation, because a bunch of broken down old guys like myself are out there hamming it up. Now, do you think I go on the ice and go, oh my God, Frank Mahovlich is there. Oh, what happens if Frank Mahovlich shoots the puck? He's almost going, oh my God, it's going to be a piece of cake. Right? So I put it in the net, but the defenseman's fault, you know? But to sit back and not give life your best shot, and I have a lot of problems with that. In fact, when I first started doing Skid Row stuff in 1967, before the days of welfare, people had to live by their wits, and they were full of vinegar, right? And my God, they used to look at me and blink and say, hey, but Padre Light's nothing but a great challenge. Give me a buck for my flop ticket because tomorrow they get me flop. They see a piano and they go over and they play a concerto, go dancing down the street, do a soft shoe routine, wink three times, they'd have $14 in their hand, they go buy two bottles of Molly Pitcher and Thunderbird. And they come back and say, yeah, life's a challenge. And then when I first 5 years down there, I'm alone in a building that no one had lived in for 5 years, and there's 120 guys in front of me. We do not have $16 between us, all of us together. I've been up all night and I say, look, there's 132 of the world's best con artists in here, and one of us has a Roman collar on, and if we can't get what we need to live through this day, we should just throw ourselves in the river. Hey, don't go about a week while we have more darn fun than you could shake a stick at, right? And we did it. We sold Christmas trees. We did every cotton picking thing. We laid tile when people... There's one church in Detroit where the tile... Because, you know, bosses in AA, these guys are great bosses. Anybody lay tile? Everybody, all right, bye, right? Who's the superintendent? 15 guys. Well, the pastor called me and said, holy cadoodle, what happened to the main aisle? The pattern's going like this, right? I said, it looks like the winding roads at Jerusalem. Very symbolic, very, very. Can of paint, if I could, you know, I had a 1917 fire truck. I used to know where the paint was stored in these places. I'd go right in and I'd just pick up the paint. The guy would be yelling at me. You can't take that pain. I say, look, every kind of pain I take for a three-week absolution, do whatever the hell you want for 3 weeks. I'm taking this pain out of here because you're in violation. I had a guy with me once who went in DT, right in the pain show. Well, Lord, he says, take the whole darn store, just get out of here. And we start painting. Anyway, you know, and it was fun all the time. You know, I'm not saying that there weren't three fights a day, but it was fun. And what I find today is that the people are dispirited, right? I mean, that's the saddest thing. Every night I put 50 guys to bed at the brothers, and the guys are, so, I walk out, what the heck's going on? Is this a morgue? You know, you're all 25, 28 years old. It looks like a morgue, and they're all hooked on that terrible thing called Star Trek. Oh, wow. But I'm supposed to have them in the shower. But and I figure, you know, we've lost a tremendous amount, right? I want to pick on the political systems or whatever, but people have lost the need to get along with other people because their biggest concern is where's the check coming from? And that has taken superiority over people. And okay. So now we get into this fourth step. Every person, everybody in this room is made up of good and of some shadow side. All right? And the thing which we try to hide is the shadow side. Now, I'm not saying the shadow side is sin. I'm not saying the shadow side is intrinsically evil. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is the shadow side is that which is in you, which you do not want anybody ever to find out about. For all kinds of goofy reasons, too. Pride, respectability. The things which we cherish most in life, which we guard with armor and gun, respectability. Right? Reputation, respectability. And so we put on all kinds of masks. I'm not saying, okay. And so we get into different games. Games are psychological encounters with people for the express purpose that they will not get to know us. That's why people play bridge. Obviously, I can't play bridge, right? Don't know how. But a game is an encounter with somebody so they won't have to get to know us, right? And so we can say everything at the superficial level, right? And then nobody really knows what's going on inside. When we deal about intimacy, you know, intimacy, I talked to somebody the other day and they said, oh, intimacy is not sex. I said, no. Oh, what is it? Right? And they lit up. Is something better? When we talk about intimacy, I mean transparency. Who am I willing to become transparent to? Who am I willing to become vulnerable to? Okay? Who am I willing to be open to? Now, you know, now we get into, again, you've accepted yourself as a worthwhile person. You've gone through the second step. There is no more fear. Fear of all these things that are going to happen. And you've learned trust. And you know that there's a creator, God, that holds you in his palm of his hand right this day and says, I love you because I love you because I love you because I love you. It doesn't mean that you abandon all right reason and go through silly things and not, you know. But I'm saying, okay, now we get into the fourth step. The fourth step is not a lot. Again, it is freedom, happiness, peace, and serenity. That's what you're looking for. In the big book, it will say, write it down 13 times. It says that. And so we do it that way. That's humility. No, it's not, well, every time I give an open talk, I do part of my fourth step. Sell that to the Marines, you know? You know, so many people I talk to know I was born in the middle of the night, but some of them think it was last night. And alcoholics are so funny because they come up and they think that they've got the world's most original story, you know? And I've heard it 19 times that day. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. We turn back to our list. Referring to our list again, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? We placed them before us in black and white. Now, I was doing this with somebody in a one-to-one session, and they said, Father, that does not mean write it down. So I watched, his lips kept moving, right? And I practiced. I play banjo. Now, when that happens to me, I just check out, right? So I practicing banjo, okay? Sweet Georgia Brown, I can remember the tune, right? And when I see the lips stopping, because, you know, when an alcoholic's lips are moving, he's most likely lying anyway. So he stopped, I turned the page. We set them on paper. There it is, right there. What's that mean? Oh, I guess that means write them down. Yeah. 13 times. We got this all down on paper and looked at it. We have listed, our personal inventory. We have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have listed the people. We have hurt. Anyway, it's 13 times. So we do it that way because you learn an awful lot more. We have written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. Well, yeah, that's it, 13 times. I must be close to that by now. And the other time people will always come to me and say, well, when do we take the first step? I've been an alcoholic now for 37 years, and I don't really know if I'm ready. Page 64. So our decision is a vital at step 3. Oh, here's something that's very interesting. You know, when I'm doing that with people, I say, well, who'd you take your third step with? They go, what? Take your third step. Father, what are you talking about? You're talking about the fifth. No, the third. Oh. Page 63. The wording. Okay, we found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with another understanding person. But it's better to meet God alone than with someone who would not understand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. Ah! You know? Ah! Because we have a great gift of living the secret life of Walter Mitty, right? And that we have all these beautiful and the things in our minds, and the rest of the world should just be ingratiated with our presence and that. But to expect us to put our mouth where our money is, nah, that's too small time, right? And now we get called to the voices. By that I mean we say, this is the measure, right? And we no longer look at this as a selfish program means that Von Quinn does what these steps say they are to do, and if he does what the steps do, that the probability of him staying sober for another day is highly likely because it's going on for 28 years. It doesn't say if Von Quinn, because he's a priest and has been sober for this amount of time, and because he doesn't have to do this because he did that when he was ordained. And when he took final vows in 1960, it doesn't say that at all. And sometimes people say the selfishness means I can do whatever the heck I want with this program. You can't get your program. I'll find it in my program. Right? Don't bug me. I won't bug me. Right? Seriously, I'm saying that funny way because it's tragic. How many people are just, fighting against each other, you know, just trying to make this thing happen. Skirmishing, that's the word I was looking for. Skirmish all the time, no. Okay, so, you know, what we're talking about is the program. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our way. The third step is you take with that with somebody else, And then the next page it says, no, that's the wrong page. Okay, they thought, or the decision was a blow, our decision was vital and crucial. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by strenuous efforts to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. What has been blocking us from relating to the people in the world, God, our higher power, or whatever? What are those things? As I've been trying to bring out to you, a lot of it's at the unconscious level. We are not even conscious of it. So how do we bring it up, and how do we start dealing with it? For one thing, pencil and paper and start writing it down. Second thing, it's not a laundry list of every bad thing you ever did. Oh my God, if you're Irish and Catholic, is it ever pathetic? These guys write their inventories, they pull down the blinds, they think they're going to sell it to Playboy within a week, they think they'll be making movies of it, you know, it's a pride, oh my God, you know, no one's ever done the things that I've done, ever, ever, you know, and they figure they, oh. And it's a joke. And that's not what this is about. Yeah, alcoholism has 44 symptoms, okay? Those 44 symptoms touch all of us in some way. And, you know, we could do a fourth step now and everybody would have to cop out and say, yeah, we've all done it. It's just different names, different faces, different times, okay? What did intolerance do to us? What did jealousy do? What did anger do? What did fear do? And there's tons of guides about those things. The important things are to make sure you're in the right frame of mind. You don't start writing the fourth step down when you've just got the divorce papers, the house burning down, and the family pet just died, and say, I think I'll go write my fourth step. All that's going to come out of that is negative. But what's got to come out of it is positive stuff to find out, you know, what's making you tick. What are the gifts? You know, the saddest thing, you want to know something really sad? If I gave you each a piece of pencil and paper and said, write 10 beautiful things about yourself, there would be people here tonight at midnight. Then I got three. Just making my bed this morning, count, Father. Yeah, I got four! I got four! Okay. God didn't put you here, you know, to do that. You know, and so what do we do? How do we become aware of that? No, and I'm not saying that you go around like, you know, saying, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? You are, you know. No, that's not what we're talking about. But there's a lot of things that can be, a lot of opportunities we have to stretch. And we're not stretching because of fear. We're not stretching because maybe I won't succeed. And the only mistake you can make is not to have tried. You know, does God or anybody need our great successes? What is success anyway? And in the field of alcoholism, I won't even try to define it because it's relative to each individual coming in. And everybody has their own definition of what it should be. And we impose that on people. He had a slip, huh? Yeah, of course he had a slip. I know I had a slip. Didn't take the step, but we don't judge. I said, no. You don't go up to a diabetic in a coma and say, here, have some M&M. Let him drink till he really hits bottom. You know, do we get a little uptight about when someone's pulling on our lifeline? Whew. Yeah, and if somebody doesn't do it our way, let me tell you the way you feel. Forget it. That's not accepting a person in their gift. Even though I might be struggling with it, I'm not saying I'm the last guy in the world that's going to be, if you've ever had to work with me, that's going to be tolerant or non-intervening. Right? We intervene in big ways, big time. Grab the body. So journeys in recovery, all right? To say, what are the like behaviors? What are the dislike behaviors? First of all, identifying the dislike behaviors. And we all got them. Again, we have a shadow side. And you've got to be able to accept your shadow side. All right? Now, there's 9 different illusions of characters. Okay, and this was worked out by the Sufi Indians 2,000 years ago. It was never written until this century. And all these different character types. And there is the redeemed side, you know, and then the compulsive side. And we have to become aware of that. If you deny the shadow, the devil gets his due. Okay? And if you think that we're all as pure as white-driven snow, you know, that's not humanity. We are sinners. We are broken. I am a broken person. You are a broken person. If you want me to get that into liturgical or Christian symbols, it's Christ is broken. Dead, bleeding, rejected on the cross. And it is just there where he says, I love you. And I've come to redeem you in that part of you which you hate the most. For me, nothing would make sense. Somalia, all of the tragedies I've seen, and, you know, living on Skid Row and in the riots and, you know, World War. And if you want to know, okay, me as a priest, now, if I want to know the guts of God, that's what it is. And it's not running away from it and pretending that, you know, yeah, man's in humanity, the man is there. We've got to do something about continuing to work for justice. We keep praying for peace. You'll never get peace until you get justice. Right. But if I want to know what the guts of God is, today, January the 22nd, 1994, that's it. Dead, rejected, bleeding, saying, I love you. Or else nothing makes sense. Or else I jump on my sailboat, of which I have a 38-foot sailboat here, right? And find some sailor, and away I go. Right? But there is purpose. You know? There is great purpose in that. And that he's there right in the middle of it all. And so now when we look at our own lives, which are important, which are not just insignificant little things, we have to look at that same thing. That we came in and it's a brokenness. And so we have all of these demonstrations of brokenness which we have to start dealing with. Such as, they're called dislike behaviors here, but intolerance, bigotry, prejudice, narrow-mindedness, Mr. Right, open one-sidedness, opinionated, know-it-all, little Hitler. Brokenness, resentment, bitterness, righteous indignation, injustice, collector, envy, slow burn, revengeful, grudging, holding. Self-pity, poor me, feeling sorry for myself, hopelessness, despair, depression, spoiled. Nobody knows the trouble I see. How I have suffered. Nobody understands me. Jealousy. Mistrust. Suspiciousness. Green-eyed monster. Where have you been for the last hour? Who are you looking at? You're interested in your bloody car or boat more than your knee. I won't continue. Fear of rejection. Seeking approval. Approval seeking. Apple polishing. Goody goody. Dripping sweetness. You know? Take that grin off your face, you know? Back slapper. Wallflower. Loser. Self. Antisocial. Loner. Self. Antisocial. Backwards. Oversensitivity, touchiness, thin skin, feeling easily hurt, fragile.
You hurt my feelings. I'm a very sensitive person, don't you know? You don't understand me.
Dislike, non-assertiveness, passive, compliant, wishy-washy, withdrawn, too agreeable, too afraid to speak up, bumping along, little eyes, dormant. Fear of failure, need to win.
Ooh.
Competitive. Hard driving, over ambitious, or not trying at all, sticking the mud, lazy, irresponsible giving up. False pride, big eye vanity, egotistical, big shot, arrogant, boastful, conceited, phony. Dislike short-term self-interest, selfish, self-centered, rip-off artist, disregarding others' interests, me first and only, inconsistent. Go look after number one. Worry, fretting, stewing, making mountains out of molehills, apprehensive, uptight, ruminating. Now, the like behaviors, for instance, I like my concern for other people. I like my ability to make others feel at ease. I like my threat treating people with respect. I like my being understanding of others. I like being helpful towards family. I like being helpful towards friends and neighbors. I like my courtesy. I like my kindness. I like my humor. I like my appearance. I like my intelligence. I like my health, my education. I like myself as a worker, as a parent, and as a spouse. I love of nature. I love skiing, athletics, playing ball, music. Art, training, domestic skills, okay. Now you get into how do I start changing dislike behaviors or what I call shadow side into like behaviors, and that's brought about by action. And this is all written down and you got worksheets on it. Okay. Tolerance. My spouse likes to eat dinner at 5:30 and I like to eat dinner at 6:30, which we have told each other, the old way of thinking for the unredeemed alcoholic, my spouse must do it my way, the right way, or else deserve to be punished. So it's the idea in our head, the feeling, I'm angry, frustrated, and the action, I punish my spouse. You're nuts. Don't you know when to eat? 5:30 is ridiculous hour. Now, okay. Now the same thing, the idea, the feeling, and the action. That's what we got to put in. Now what's the idea? My spouse and I have different ideas about what time supper will be. It's really not the end of the world. No, the feeling is I still get a little bit irritated, but happy that I am not punishing her anymore, not acting out. Right? And the action is I don't punish my spouse at dinner. And what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, it ain't going to come about by just thinking about it. What are the things for blocking you? Again, if I put that piece of paper and said, write the 10 beautiful things about yourself, people are going to be here at midnight. That's horrible. That really is, especially for AA and Al-Anon with the gift of the fellowship and all of these steps and the opportunities we have to go and make mistakes and bang heads and do all kinds of things and still not be full of vim, vigor, and vitality. No, that's the tragic part. No, and sure, that's all covered in there somewhere or other. You know, just trying to be pleasing to people, and always, you know, doing what they want to do, but never really standing up to that. You know, it's very polite and everything, but inside you could be seething with hostility, and not able to stand on your own two feet. And then you have feelings of guilt and all of the negative stuff comes backing in, and then where's the trust? It's not there. So the purpose of the fourth step is to bring out the beauty in you. You know, I say this to people, if God was to look right down now, would he see the beauty of his creation in the twinkle of your eye?
Getting through another day.
Bonum Defensiva Messi, you are going to be the only big book anybody reads, be they in AA or out of AA, and if goodness isn't diffusing itself, what are they going to see? What is one of the big things that detracted you when you came into AA and Al-Anon? People laugh. Now, I'll always remember that stupid guy who met me at the door of my first meeting. I had horses, eh? And his name was Frank, and he looked like my horse, eh? He had big teeth. And he was smiling. Can you imagine God's gift to Christendom locked up in Chicago and this idiot is smiling? He doesn't realize it. The tragedy that the whole Christianity is in. Right? And he's laughing. And he's smiling. You know? And we look around and we say, ooh. These people are laughing. And about 6 months later, we let go with our first big laugh. Ha! Oops, so huge. Call the doctor. What happened to him? He laughed. First time in 6 months. Oh, we snickered a lot of people all through our life. But first time we had a good laugh when we pulled two muscles in our back. Now, what the fourth step is about is how do you get that? If you can't find the joy out of living, that ain't anybody else's fault but yours. Really. You know? And what I'm saying is, yeah, we got to accept the shadow side, and that's us. And that's exactly where God loves us, because that's what he comes to redeem, and that's what we come to share. When we talk about the fifth step, that's what we come to share. You will never join the human race if you do not take a fifth step. You can go to AA meetings 3 times a day. Or go to a pontifical institute. But until you get down face to face with somebody, and that's what I'll start talking about. You know? Now again, as you know, it's a matter of your own deep spirituality. And that means the beauty in you. And your relationship with your Creator, and your relationship with God, and you're not just doing it because everybody in the group's doing it, or because you just read this book on this guy, or you just read this book, or this guy sounds great. No, we go fishing around for someone, the answers that we need. You gotta stop all that and say, hey, where's it really at with me? Now, what are the values in life that I'm willing to stand up and die for? It's much harder to live for them than to die for them. So what are the values in life that I'm willing to stand up and live for? No? And not just let the rest of the world run. Run me, or because everybody's doing this, or the new thing. What are those things? Where do I stand up in my individuality and be able to share these gifts? Now, unless I've taken the fourth step, I'm not aware of what they are. And if I just go to meetings and do it, what I'm going to hear is a lot of people spilling negative stuff. Sure, the 44 symptoms are there. Yeah, the loneliness brought us into this, the jealousy brought us into this, the intolerance brought us into this, the anger brought us into this. All relatedness with other people, by the way. Recovery, and a fourth step is the journey in relationship to other people. That's why it is so funny, peculiar. With all the alkies I dealt with and have said to me, well, Father, you know, I'm one of the most fortunate people in the world. My alcoholism never hurt anybody else. No, and say that with sincerity, really believing it, you know? So you just, you know, I'm sure he's going to say another 8 months or something, right? But that's how defiantly blind we get. You know, so, you know, when I do the AA retreat for the weekend, starting all weekend, where everybody has to get to know everybody on a first-name basis, and that's really an exercise. You know, even in groups this large, everybody would know everybody's name by Saturday night, when we start Friday night. When I get to the fourth step, it's one question they have to write down. One answer to one question. What makes you enthusiastic? Well, I like to play the piano. When's the last time you played the piano? 1989. So I ask you the same thing. No? Because you are the forger of your own destiny. Nobody else. You've been given free will. Groups of Al-Anon, AA, have given the tools, magnificent tools. But the simple fact is we get banged down to nothing with the surrender, with the hitting the bottom, as long as it's followed by a surrender. And then we have to learn something about humility. And the continuing conditioning process must go on, has to go on. You never graduate, you never don't have to go to meetings. Ever, 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 ever. Believe me. I've had some tragic things happen, and people who've been sober 35 years and figure, I don't have to go anymore. You know, and people ask me, Mahalo, I gotta go to meetings. Until you want to go. Right? That's the big difference. Okay, let's break until 3:20 now, because I'm 5 minutes late, and then we'll do a fifth step and then try to move on a bit farther. Okay.